Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
This is the Midday 180
served up by Wendy's on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Second hour of the program. Big show today. It's about to get kicked off with our guest list that includes Logan Ryan and Adoree Jackson in studio with us coming up at noon, plus John McClain at 1 o'clock. And right now, Blake Bedingfield, former Titans scout. Time to dive in and discuss Titans and Patriots, 34-10, the victory in Week 10 over New England. And we'll also preview the Indianapolis Colts coming up in Week 11.
What's up, Blake?
Hey.
Let's start with what seemed to me to be the thing that set the whole game up was that they made Brady, and you wrote it, it made him look old. And the route to making Brady look bad is up the middle. Everybody knows that. I didn't think the Titans had an avenue to find to get up the middle, and they found it. How did they find it?
I thought they did an excellent job of a little bit of delayed blitz with Wesley Woodard. It was really their linebackers, inside backers that were putting pressure. But Jarrell Casey's going to be hard to handle no matter by himself. And he's working those inside lanes. But they did a really good job of working with Wesley Woodard up the middle, putting pressure. There was pressure that Brady perceived was happening, and it wasn't. He was falling back. He was actually falling down without contact at times. He was feeling pressure that wasn't there, and that's what the Titans created early on in that game.
Wesley said when that blitz worked, there's about 5 minutes left in the first quarter, when he beat White, Byard came a little bit too, but he beat White to get back there to get that sack, and he said when you do it the first time and it works, there are like long range implications. And I think that's what you're saying is it may not be working the rest of the time, but because he was there that time, all of a sudden you start to think they're there, even if they're only kind of close to there.
No question. And they were creating space on the outside with a little bit of an outside rush. They weren't worried about Brady escaping the pocket side to side, outside the tackles. That he's going to step up in the pocket and try to deliver the throw. Logan Ryan's sack right before half was an easy sack for him. There was a receiver lined up on the offensive left side that was close to the line of scrimmage. He blitzed. He blitzed through an open gap, and Brady's going to step up in that gap. And he had that. The one thing about Tom Brady now, he doesn't have the arm strength to deliver downfield without creating it in the passing lanes. And what I mean by that is he has to step up to create downfield passes, especially on that that Hail Mary he was going to throw right before half. And Logan knew it, and Logan did a good job of a little bit of delayed nickel blitz.
You talk about kind of the echo of the ringing bell. Seemed like Vaccaro stepping up and crushing White on that very first play also sent a signal, hey, these easy access throws that you live and breathe on aren't going to be there. Which I was surprised they went away as quickly as they did. I mean, those easy access throws are easy access for a reason. Was it as simple as that? Like they sent a message early and they played tight and they just weren't there?
They did. And, you know, they sat on a lot of those underneath routes, whether it was the routes in the flats to the running backs or the short routes to Julian Edelman. He had a lot of catches, but he got hit on those catches too now. I mean, he ended up after the game looked pretty worn out, and I think he had an injured ankle as well, but the receivers got hit when they went across the middle, and that was a big part of the defense. They sat on that intermediate to short routes, which is a staple for Tom Brady, and then they only went up top once, and they were able to complete a long third down conversion, but I was surprised they didn't go deep more.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. Blake, the stat sheets can read different things each week, but just from the scouting perspective that you have, was this Mariota's best game as a pro? If so, why did you feel that way? If not, is there another example you would point to?
You know, I thought this game, I really liked the way he played against Philly early in the year. He looked in control in both those games. You know, going back to his rookie year, the New Orleans game was outstanding, especially bringing the team back to a win at the end. But he was unbelievable in that game with some really young receivers. That was a Dorial Green-Beckham game where he converted on that last drive multiple first downs. You know, and that was in his rookie year. Big stats. I think he had 4 touchdown passes in that game. But, you know, Green Bay, I think in his second year was a big game. I like
his very first game, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, no question. And you know, Marcus has those games. When you see the confidence level, whether it's a little bit of the run and the pass, not a created run, not a design run, but where he can escape the pocket, create space for himself. Early in the game on that first drive versus New England, you saw it. He was able to roll out on the first touchdown pass to Jonnu Smith, and it was the defender had to make a choice. Is he going to tackle the quarterback, or is he going to let up on the receiver? And he decided to let up on the receiver and go for the Q.
You know, it important for you to see him move the offense the way he did and not look to run it, because you mentioned the touchdown pass to Jonnu Smith. There was another point on the second possession, maybe in the first possession, where he scrambles, goes right to the line of scrimmage and delivers a dart to Corey Davis instead of running. He had some room to run, chose not to.
Moved and looked.
Yeah, he was looking downfield. He only had 2 runs in the game, and that didn't come until the second half. So I thought that was encouraging.
I think that's a big evolution in his game, is not to use his legs. But what he's doing is he's trusting his receivers with that extra half a second he's created by finding that open passing lane, stepping up in the pocket, not having to roll laterally all the time, but stepping up in the pocket. He's given his receivers, which now he's starting to trust, more time to create separation from the DBs. And he had a really good comfort level with Corey Davis in that game, regardless if Stephon Gilmore, who's a really good corner in this league, was covering him throughout most of the game.
You said he's starting to trust his receivers more. Is that simply they're starting to make more catches now, or are they in the right spot more often than not?
I think a big part of it is they're starting to make those catches, and Corey Davis looked confident in this game. He doesn't do that week in and week out, but he looked confident in this game, and whether it was the week of practice beforehand, but he went in this game and was going to target him. And Corey Davis didn't let him down. He made some really good catches, that one touchdown pass in the corner of the end zone, and obviously that one where he rotated his entire frame around to catch a ball that was probably an incompletion.
Has he proven now, if you're game planning him, you cannot defend him one-on-one? We saw that against Philadelphia, and now we've seen it with Gilmore, one of the best in the league at corner. Are there other examples this year where it's been man coverage and he didn't perform well?
Yes. You know, I don't think he's a guy now you're going to have to just take away. I think this game is something that's going to be on the radar of teams. You know, is there another threat that we're worried about? We haven't seen Tajay Sharpe in the past 2 weeks. You've seen other examples of players that are stepping up and making plays when called upon, but they haven't had a bunch of been loaded down with a number of targets, whether it's Cameron Batts, and Taywan Taylor didn't play in this game, but him in the past. You know, there's other people that are going to have to step up. You know, do you take Corey Day? If you're the Indianapolis Colts, do you take him away and say, find that other option? That's a possibility.
Does in Marcus's repertoire, what's a harder throw for him to make? The throw from 2 weeks ago, the Dallas game to Jennings, or the touchdown throw from this game to Davis?
I think the touchdown throw to Davis is a harder throw. He's always not to the left as much. If that throw was to the right, he's just always struggled with outside the number throws to the right. It's the way he doesn't rotate his body around consistently and get his hips around. He usually leaves that ball high. This one was a really good throw. He put great touch on it, and he had a big physical receiver that was able to run underneath it and make an outstanding catch, even with a DB dragging on him, on his arm. So that's what you want to see out of this receiver, is when defenders are dragging on his frame and bringing his arm down, he can still muscle through and make the catch.
I don't have the referee in front of me. Hutton, you might remember who
Vinovich,
it was. Vinovich. It was a let them play official, and Vrabel clearly game planned for a let them play official. It went both ways. It worked against Josh Gordon, and it seemed to work for Davis.
You know, I thought it was interesting because the Titans didn't really get called down the field for any handsy or holding on to the receivers, which they did all day long. There was a big fourth down conversion with Julian Edelman and Logan Ryan. Logan had him wrapped around the waist, and there was a no call. There were 2 calls against the Patriots defense, both big plays. That would have been a big play if Corey Davis would have dropped that ball because they called a pass interference on that play. And then the other one was actually Corey Davis crossing the middle, and there was a pass interference on the third down. So, you know, there weren't a lot of calls in this game, and it really played into the Titans' hands with being physical with the receivers. Josh Gordon did not want that physicality against him, which usually he can rise to that challenge.
I'm very interested to see who the ref is this week, and just like if they wind up with an opposite guy this week and have to play a completely different style, it'll be a real test. And I hate that it's a league that's like that, where, oh, this week we can be super handsy, and next week we got to keep the hands off.
Yeah, it's like an umpire calling strikes in baseball. You never know what you're going to get.
The referee is John Hussey.
Have to check the notes on him.
Blake, is there a difference between, other than just the coverage here, I'm talking for Corey Davis specifically, does he dominate man coverage more than zone coverage?
Yes, I think he gets confused in zone coverages. Just finding that open zone, sitting down, getting comfortable, on the same page with the quarterback. And you, on film, when you watch Corey Davis in zone, he will sit in a spot and then move, and Marcus wants him in a certain spot. Quarterbacks have to have that comfort level. That's where Tajay Sharpe is really good. Tajay Sharpe has that instinct and feel with the quarterback and that relationship. They're on the same page, and he can sit and find that open space at times.
So you say he sits in a spot and then moves.
Right.
Marcus just wants him to stay in that spot.
Well, not necessarily. If Marcus sees and feels that safety or linebacker coming toward Corey in zone, Corey has to move away from that contact, and he's going to throw him away from that contact. So that's that relationship you have with the quarterback and receiver.
Is it the opposite for a player like Tajay Sharpe, where he did very well against the Chargers zone coverage, and we haven't seen him show up the last 2 weeks?
No question. When Tajay gets pressed at the line of scrimmage, when he gets manned up and someone's physical with him, he's not going to separate consistently, not on a timing route. He can, because Tajay does have good route running skills, but he doesn't have the strength and physicality to break away and create that separation that's needed in and out of his routes.
What are we likely to see from Indy?
I think you're going to see a combination of both. If you look at the corners that they're playing with right now, they're more zone corners. They're just built that way. They have one converted safety that's playing corner. They have some bigger guys in Quincy Wilson, but he's been a backup. So, you know, it just depends on what they go with. They have a combination of both, but right now they have more zone-type corners.
Catch the Zone on the go? Download the iPhone or Android app today. Download it now at 1045thezone.com.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us, former Titans scout for 19 years. Now you can read his work, paulkarski.com. He's got the recap of the Titans and Patriots. We'll have a preview of Titans and Colts later this week. Blake, is Adoree Jackson playing like a number one corner?
You know, he is playing very well. When I say a number one corner, I'm talking about he can shut down anyone at any time. Now, he's playing at a very high level. If they continue to match him up versus the number one receiver, which he's capable. He's always been a competitive player. This goes back to college. He's always been a competitive player. He's very fast. He's very instinctive, and he has a little bit of gambler in him. But the one thing about his gambler mentality is he has the speed and quickness to make up when he makes a mistake.
Yeah, and the ability to you're right about the speed. It's that track background, too, that really plays a factor in that.
Well, one of the things Adoree, when he was coming out of college, he would spend the majority of his spring running track. So he wasn't getting a lot of the technique and fundamental work in spring practice, which a lot of the young players need. You know, he was participating in spring practice, but he was really running track. He was a Olympic level track athlete. So he wasn't getting that work. He's gotten a lot more since he's been in the NFL.
Have you seen enough of him as a returner?
You know, I keep waiting for him to break it, but I don't have that same feel I did watching him in college. He hit one this past week, and that was on the fumble, and I wanted to see him do that. Hit it upfield, run away from the coverage coming toward him, and that's what he has the ability to do. He usually has that no fear. I've been very surprised with his lack of big plays in the punt game.
Would you maybe take a look elsewhere now? Batson has proved his worth as a receiver now. He's got a nice little role for himself. He's got He's listed as a second punt returner. I'm wondering if it's time to maybe try something different.
I would not, unless what happens early in the season where he got the concussion and gets knocked out. But, I mean, that's a big concern. But, you know, I still think he has that home run potential. And once he finds it, you kind of have to hit that first one to hit the second one. And I would keep throwing him out there.
I would, too. I haven't seen enough. Paul has seen enough. Even going into this year, he wouldn't put it back.
Well, I just think they got really lucky. He fumbled two in a row in this game. You lose one of those in a game where the Patriots needed any spark they could find. I just think he got lucky.
Well, and that's the question for me is when does the fumbles, does that become a liability?
No question.
Where you have to factor that in, because two in one game, the guys are getting benched for that.
I think the first time you lose one, it's going to be a possibility.
That's when people have a
just
problem.
Just keep falling on it.
Can the Titans survive with Butler as the number three?
I think they're going to. I like LeSean Sims. I've stated that pretty much every week. I think he has ability to be a number three in this league. Malcolm did not get picked on this week.
Hogan was really down the chart in terms of options, huh?
A lot of it was just Brady zoning in on Gordon or Edelman and kind of shying away from Hogan, which was a surprise. But right now, sure. Until he continues to get beat deep, if that happens this week, I think you have to take a look at it.
I guess why I'm asking that is, as you look at the rest of November and December coming up, if the Titans are to get to where they want to be, which is atop the division and a nice seed going into the postseason, can they do that with Malcolm Butler as the number three corner on the roster? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do they need him to play up to expectation to reach the goals that they set back in August?
No question. He doesn't do them any good being on the bench. He doesn't do them any good just being a special teams type player. He's got to come back and play at a high level. You know, this is crunch time. We're in November, December. You're making a playoff push, and you're going to have to make a playoff push with the players that you pay to get to that level. Now, you know, has he done it? Not consistently this week. Like I said, you know, they didn't go after him, so he was off the hook a little bit. But, you know, I think you got to go with him. You can't really take him out at this point.
I hear a lot, and it sounds easy, but Kendrick Lewis in for Vaccaro, and clearly Lewis can't run the same way Vaccaro can. Can you give me an example of why the secondary is better with Vaccaro in there, other than just his ability to run downhill? Is there a situation that you can point to where he's just simply better, and here's why?
Well, first, Vaccaro is much faster. He's much more aggressive to the ball in the air. He's much, much better run-down player, running the alleys. You know, to be a safety in this league, you have to really have no fear. When you come down in the alleys, and what I mean is you're running in between the guards and tackles to come up and make a play at the line of scrimmage or 1 yard plus one, you have to go up against the guards and tackles that may blindside you, and you have to have no fear. Vaccaro has never played with fear. He has always been an all-out, go-get-em type run-down player. The thing in the pass game that's got him in trouble in the past is a little bit of his over-aggressiveness, and he'll want to make a play on the ball. He'll want to make a big hit, and he'll give up a big play at times. That hasn't shown up recently, but what I like to see is Vaccaro and Byard both are good rundown players. They're interchangeable in the sense that both can play the deep middle, where Kendrick Lewis is going to get he's going to get exposed at times like the Charger game.
That's my follow-up there is Vaccaro, aside from just his individual play, he allows Byard to be more versatile, as opposed to when Lewis is in there, maybe Byard can't be as versatile based on how they have to use him down in, down out.
I agree. And part of what's helping Kenny is pass rush that's happening now. If the pass rush continues to get better, Kenny and Byard can play a little bit more free and not have to worry about the deep middle, whether they're in too deep coverage or they're having to play back. They're not having to do that right now. They're playing very aggressive. They're getting after the quarterback, and that's helping the safeties.
If we were picking guys who were going to be leading the team in sacks at this stage, nobody would be voting for Jayon Brown, who we thought was a good coverage player who could develop it into more. How much more has he developed into here, and how much, I mean, he's obviously rushed the passer well. It's obviously still not a good sign for this team that he's atop the leaderboard in sacks.
I think this aggressive defense from the inside linebacker standpoint has really helped Jayon develop as a player. Not as much reading, taking on blockers. He's attacking, and when he misses, but he misses fast. And that's okay. You want players to play, if they have speed in their game, you want players to play fast. And that's what Jayon's doing right now. He's learning from Wesley Woodard, too. And I always give Wesley a lot of credit. He's a team leader. He's just a consummate pro, the way he approaches a game. Wesley has got good speed, but, you know, even coming out of Kentucky, he was not a big physical linebacker. He was a 215-pound guy that could run fast in a straight line, undrafted player. He's made himself into a really good pro. He's helping those young guys come along. Evans will benefit from a Wesley Woodyard being on your team. And I think Jayon's playing like Wesley, if you look at him now.
You noticed Evans outside a little bit in this game.
I did. He rushed from the outside, and that's what he did well early in his college career. Why not put him on the outside if you're not getting much out of a Rakpo? Landry got dinged up on one play and then came back in. But, you know, if you don't have that consistent pass rush on the outside, get someone that has ability to do it. He didn't do a lot in this game from a pass rush. He had one inside spin move that he actually fell down on, but created a little bit of a pressure, got the quarterback to move in the pocket. But keep throwing him out there and let him have that chance.
Are you liking more of what you're seeing from him inside as he gets more used to that position?
I do. He's playing a little bit more, a little bit faster. He's playing a little bit more confident in his role. If they're going to put him on the outside, there's not a lot of thinking there. It's a pass rush move. It's, you know, he's not playing a gap. He's not worried about containment a lot in what they're asking him to do. He's really just going to rush off the edge, better than putting him in the nickel on the inside.
Are you seeing that hesitation from him? You mentioned Jayon Brown plays fast, knows what he's doing, and if he misses, he's missing fast. Do you still see that hitch to where he's not quite confident in exactly what to do?
There's a few plays in the run game at him, especially a good play action team where he's hesitating run and pass. You'll see a little bit of a hesitation, but not like you were early in the season. These players on defense, whether it's Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown, really started in preseason with him, but these guys are starting to play better, and it's just getting used to the system. You see it on defense, and you're starting to see it on offense.
Former Titan scout Blake Bedingfield in studio with us.
We all want to see pass rush out of Brian Arakpo, but he's done some things in the run game. Had a 5-yard loss, tackle for a loss in this game. He seems to be doing some good work setting the edge. Have you noticed him out there less in pass rush situations? Should he be out there less in pass rush situations? And what's he doing against the run?
He's out there a little bit less. You see Correa in the game. You saw Evans in the game. Landry's obviously going to be in the game in the pass rush. But Brian just doesn't have the same juice off the edge he had. In the run game, he's still strong. He's always had a great punch and to be able to get off blockers on the edge. He's always had really good instincts in the run game. He has the instincts as a pass rusher. He just doesn't have the juice off the edge that he used to. And he's going to win at times. He's going to win more with a pressure and a hurry than he is going to finish a sack off. But, you know, they're going to try to put some of these young players in that have a little bit more speed, create instant pressure right off the snap. That's why you're seeing Landry. That's why you're seeing Evans. Correa can do that. He's a little bit out of control on his pass rush, but he creates that instant get off. Off the snap.
Blake, when you watch Indy this year, what stands out to you other than their offensive line? I want to get into Quentin Nelson and the offensive line coming up, but is there something they do really well other than protect Luck?
Luck is getting back to who he was before the injury. I did not like what I saw to Andrew in preseason. He looked a little hesitant to make certain throws. He had a little bit of a hitch over the top, and I was worried about his shoulder. I've had 2 shoulder surgeries. Not playing on the NFL level, but I've had, and I know that changes the way you do things, especially your mechanics. But he looks back to normal like he was when he was drafted. And he's always been a spread it around type quarterback. He's been extremely accurate. He's got a great ball. When he throws his ball, it's a very catchable ball. Not all great throwers throw a catchable ball. He throws one, and it's easy to catch. It's easy to get upfield after the catch, regardless whether you have great hands or not. And that's one of the things. He's playing with a group of receivers right now that are not NFL caliber starting receivers outside of a T.Y. Hilton. And he's down on the list in terms of statistics. But, you know, he's got a group that looks good on paper at times, but not your top of the level NFL type receivers.
And what's interesting about that is that they're putting up 29 points a game.
And a good big part of it is they got Jack Doyle back, who was in Tennessee, and we released. Eric Ebron is
you sound always, bitter about that.
I am a little bit. He was
go into it.
What's that?
Go into it. Okay. I mean, we always hear about LeGarrette and how that was a mistake. I was thinking about that last night. I mean, it's been a long time since you let Jack Doyle go in a training camp, but boy, would he be a solution to some problems now.
One of the things as a scout is after the draft, you work on your undrafted free agency and you rank the board and you rank the players that you want, and you can offer a contract, a signing bonus to a player, and you earmark certain players that you feel have a chance to make your 53-man roster. Even with seven draft choices, these players are draftable-level players. Once the seventh round starts to click down, you rank that board. Jack Doyle is very high on that list, and he was a player that went through camp and was really good. And when it came down to the end where the GM has to make the decision to cut players, he was on the cutting room floor, and we were going to try to put him on the practice squad, and he was claimed by the Colts, and now he's in year, what, six, seven, eight, and had a really nice career. Now, did we think that he was going to have that level? No, but he was a really good player at Western Kentucky, real smart, excellent hands, good route runner. You know, he would be a excellent replacement for Delanie Walker.
Who were the tight ends at the time?
Oh, boy, you're asking me to go back, but I think Jared Cook was on the team at the time. I would have to go back and look and see who the top
three it wasn't
were.
A bad batch,
yeah,
though.
It, actually,
same as with LeGarrette.
What year was this we're talking?
He said he's in his eighth year, maybe. So
he's so right like around, 2011 or something.
Yeah, yeah. 10 or 11. I have to look back at that roster. I'll go look at it.
He would solve a lot of issues. You're right.
But he's a good player. And then when you add in the athletic.
Did Eric you think he would be this good, though?
No, no. When, you know, you never think of a player that went undrafted like that. He was going to be more of a complimentary piece.
Yeah.
Really what he's doing now with Ebron, and that's what he should be, is he's a solid blocker at the line of scrimmage, but he's a really good route runner, real smart in the middle of the field. He's your third down move the chains kind of guy, where Ebron can do a little bit more. He's better in the red zone area. You know, both, it's really good for Andrew because now he has two outlets in that tight end position.
Scouting Andrew Luck in 2012, what was that like? Well, and, I mean, you knew he was going number one, so I don't know how much time you actually spent looking and evaluating him and Stanford, but do you have a story from that?
You know, the first thing was is you saw the Peyton Manning get injured for the year, and as a Titan employee fan, after facing Peyton for all those years, you were so excited. He was out. He's out for the year. We're going to win ball games. I can't wait to play the Colts. We're going to
crush
them.
Now's our time. Yeah. Here it is. The era is over.
We're going to crush them, and I can't wait. And then you start to see everyone crushing them, and you knew the quarterback that was going to come out. And in the room, when you're starting to talk about the draft, you're seeing the Colts at the top of the list, and you can't believe what you're seeing. I mean, there's an entire generation of children that were born in Indianapolis, okay, that have never seen bad quarterback play. They have seen Peyton Manning for all those years. Yeah. And we're talking about, when I'm talking about a generation, I'm talking about kids that were born that went through college that have not seen bad quarterback play. And the Colts were lucky enough to have the premier talent.
Packers fans could say the same. I'm
no question
about
it.
That's about the only other team.
It is and I guess the Patriots with Brady. He's so old now.
The guy who stood between the Titans and Jack Doyle, Taylor Thompson, 2013.
The converted.
Craig Stevens, Taylor Thompson, Delanie Walker.
From SMU, right? Taylor Thompson?
Yes, he was SMU. He's actually a defensive end and was recruited by a lot of teams to play tight end. Saw him at an all-star game. This is Taylor Thompson now. Saw him at an all-star game in Arkansas, freezing cold in Little Rock, Arkansas. Taylor was a tight end, actually recruited by Vanderbilt and a couple of other schools, went to the SMU, and was a really good athlete, really good hands, played a lot of tight end that All-Star game, we ended up drafting him.
I feel like he was committed
Chris
to Vandy
Palmer
at one point.
No, I mean, he wasn't necessarily just a Chris Palmer guy. He was a fifth-round, sixth-round draft choice that had a lot of upside because of his talent. You know, you're talking about a 6'5", 260-pound person that could run, just didn't have the defensive mentality. Hopefully you can make him into a tight end.
Tough to draft someone and say we're moving him to tight end immediately and then cut him for a guy who was undrafted, right?
It is. And, you know, that's the tough thing. Do you go four tight ends at that spot? You know, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you went 5-1 year.
You know, in my mind, I remember actually keeping a corner that we needed. It was a veteran corner that we needed over Jack Doyle at that point. I I would have to.
Mike Capellerin?
But it was because of an injury situation.
Oh, those injuries. Paul, your dream may have come true with the extra tight end on the roster, if not for the cornerback injury.
Well, like, hindsight's always easy. I never bust these guys on that. But I will say there was a year they started with five tight ends, I think.
Was that a Wisenhunt
year?
That
was Wisenhunt, yeah. They kept four receivers.
Yeah. It's a very important position, Paul.
Very important.
Very important.
Blake, Luck spreads it around. He's always been known for that, but this year in particular, in Reich's offense, he has thrown touchdown passes to 11 different players. How are they going about this week to week?
You know, it's just his style, and he's kind of has that next man up mentality, and he's always been like that. The Colts have really not surrounded him with a lot of playmakers since he's been there. Unfortunately, he's still trying to find that, you know, whether they traded for a Trent Richardson and hopefully he was going to take the pressure off in the run game. And, you know, they had some receivers at times, but never anybody that was really outstanding. T.Y. Hilton came into his own. He was a late round draft choice, but he made him what he is. You know, you've got a guy named Chester Rogers that came out of Grambling undrafted. I actually played with Chester's, father, Chester Rogers Sr., in high school, and I knew him for a long time coming out of college, and he's had a nice 3 or 4 year career as a supplement in the passing game to Andrew Luck, and he's made his career.
And they do have a run game. They didn't have it this past week against Jacksonville, but the previous 2 or 3 weeks they've been running the ball well. I'm not saying the offense goes through the backs, but they had success. Marlon Mack, I believe, is at the top of that list. What was the scouting report on him?
You know, we like Marlon Mack a lot. Marlon is a combination back. He's a good receiver out of the backfield as well as a runner. He's got good size, but excellent straight-ahead speed. You know, he's instinct vision-wise is average to above. But, you know, he's got a good combination skills. He was going to be a good number two back with potential to move up as a number one. Again, in that offense with an outstanding quarterback, you know, you look a lot better. That's why he's going to have those big days at times. And then other days he's going to look average. That's kind of the back he is. But, you know, it adds something to their offense, being someone that they don't have to take out of the game.
We'll discuss Quentin Nelson and the Colts offensive line coming up.
Hey, quick Titans one before we hit the break here. And I know you felt like a lot of us about Cameron Batson when he made the roster, like Aaron Stinney. He thought, you know, seems like just a guy and didn't see anything. I know it's only been two catches a game the last two games, but they've had a lot of problems, obviously, finding guys who get in the right spots and hold on to balls and stuff. He's created a little niche for himself in these last two with some dependable stuff. Your feeling about him evolving like most of us?
You know, I think it's good. I think when you have those little niche roles, it's what can he do if they expand that role? I think right now they're better off playing him in that little niche role. He's got speed. He's got quickness. He's small. He's not really going to take away ever your best corner. He's going to get the last guy on the list. And right now they're using him very effectively, especially with Taywan out and Tajay a little injured and not being as effective the last 2 weeks. So, you know, this is what good quarterbacks do. Okay. Andrew Luck's done it for his entire career. Marcus is starting to do it. He's making average to above average players look better because of the quarterback play. And he's playing on that level these last few weeks. And you want that to be a consistent theme the rest of the year. You want to see players like a Cameron Batson or when a Darius Jennings comes in and runs a deep route. Two times he's run a deep route. They were both in his hands. One he dropped, one he didn't. That's the caliber of player. But you want to see them have the chance to make plays.
Joshua points out on Twitter, Packers and Colts generations of kids have not seen bad quarterback play, from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck.
And probably hated by scouting staffs around on the other 30.
They are. There's no question for a scout that's been around for a number of quarterback draft choices. You would rather just draft one and be done with it.
Blake, Quentin Nelson and this Colts offensive line, how good is it?
You know, right now they're playing at a very high level. Quentin Nelson is a rookie. Braden Smith is another rookie. Braden's actually playing out of position. He's going to have to play some right tackle. But Quentin is an outstanding lineman coming out of Notre Dame. One of the better guards that have come out in the last 4 or 5 years. Sets the tone with his physicality, but also his aggression. You know, this is a group that needed that influx of talent, and he went out and drafted two very high in the draft.
He's very good. The offensive line, what, they haven't allowed a sack in, would you say, four or five games? It's 185 snaps.
You know, a lot of that is Andrew getting rid of the ball quickly. And, you know, with the good quarterbacks, whether it's Brady and Luck and Rodgers, they're not going to take those sacks and actually take the lost yardage. That's the really good quarterbacks on first down. If they get pressure, they're going to throw the ball away and live to play on second down. And because they know they can make that second and 10 throw or a second and 7 and create a short yardage situation on third down. So, you know, the really good quarterbacks do not take sacks.
We talked earlier about the Titans' ability to make it clear to Brady that they were going to take away those easy access throws that get him out of that trouble. How can they carry that over to Luck? And how much better or worse are the Colts at maybe going over the top on you if you try to press up on that stuff?
This is going to be a very similar situation. One of the reasons Brady couldn't make that down the field throw was the pressure that was coming in his face. They're going to have to create the pressure up the field again, just like they did versus Brady. Now, Andrew does have enough athleticism to escape outside the pocket, unlike Tom Brady. So they do have to worry about that ability to move lateral and get outside.
So the Patriots were without Gronk. And here you have you have Ebron and Doyle, who we were just talking about, who seemed to me to be able to fill that space that Woodyard and Brown would be coming from, where maybe Edelman wasn't able to get free. How much of an issue would it be for those guys to break free into that area that the blitzers could be coming from?
That's where the run game starts to have an effect. If you have the tight ends that can play in that middle of the field, the run game, that's going to loosen up those linebackers. They're going to have to drop in those zones to prevent those passes to the tight ends. And what will happen is it'll create open spaces for that running back, Marlon Mack. Now, the Colts, unlike the Patriots, actually have a downfield threat in T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. can get deep vertically and track the ball very well. So, you know, that's an added dimension that the Patriots didn't have.
What's the worst playing conditions you've seen in the NFL, field-wise? And have you seen the field that NFL is contemplating letting these teams play on in Mexico City?
I've heard about it today, but I have not seen that field.
Let me show you this picture. Here, check this bad boy out.
It's really bad.
Yeah, that does not
look like a war-torn nation
field. You know, there's been a few old fields that I remember. I remember San Francisco. Well, not old field. Actually, that was a brand-new field. San Francisco's field, when they built the new stadium, was really poor. The grass wasn't taken. It was real loose. You know, the Titans every year have to resod their grass at least once, sometimes twice. And there's usually, it depends, if it gets cold like it is now, it's going to take a while for those roots to take hold. And you saw a lot of slipping on Sunday outside the numbers. The drainage system is not as good on the Titan field. There's not a heating element underneath that allows the growth, and that's prevented some of the grass to grow and take hold.
They're resodding right now at Nissan Stadium.
And that's not surprising based on what you saw with the slippage.
I thought it looked pretty good, and I didn't know about the slippage. I was making a joke after the game. There were a lot of questions about the slippage from the New England press, who seemed very concerned with the slippage based on Brady's inability to keep its footing, which I thought was more of a 41-year-old man's inability to run when asked to be a receiver.
Well, yeah, part of that is a little bit of the age of Tom Brady. But, you know, what you see is a lot of the players like to wear the molded cleats now. The molded cleats cannot be changed unless they go to a higher level of the cleat. The screw-in cleats, equipment guys are really important right now because they will actually take the shoes off during the break and put a bigger cleat on those screw-in cleats. But a lot of the players like to wear signed to wear, and they'll wear the molded cleats nowadays.
Another fast hour with Blake Bedingfield in the books. Great having you in. We'll be reading your work at paulkoharski.com.
It's fun to be here.
Yep. Give us a one matchup you're watching this week.
You know, I'm going to watch T.Y. Hilton versus Malcolm Butler. This is something that can be exposed. You know, see if they go back to Malcolm Butler. He had an off week last week, meaning no one really took him deep, and this will be an opportunity to do that.
Would you not keep Adoree matched up on their most dangerous guy?
That's probably what they're going to do. Adoree can run with T.Y. That does open up the inside game for the linebackers, whether it's a Wesley Woodard or Jayon Brown. But they do have two good inside nickel linebackers to take away those tight ends.